Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to this special Christmas edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program, we revisit some of the most captivating and positive stories that we broadcast on Africa Link this year. Like the trains in Nigeria that for many years were out of service and are now whistling again.
Because our road is not okay. That's why you see people that they are used to enter train. This is how you see people that was entering like that.
Motorists in Liberia welcomed traffic lights 14 years after the civil war ended.
Well, I am standing on Broad Street where traffic looks relatively tense. This is one of Liberia's busiest streets, and we have the installation of traffic lights.
Also on the program, citizens of Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda will only need the identification cards to cross borders with effect from the 1st of January 2014. These are some of the stories we've lined up for you in this Christmas edition, and I'll be right back after this. Let's begin in Nigeria, where traveling by train was the preferred means of transportation for millions of Nigerians when their country gained independence from Britain in 1960. But in the last three decades, the Nigerian Railway Corporation was only able to offer skeletal services. Railway stations were overgrown by weeds, railway components were stolen, while rail bridges and tracks were in disrepair. Now authorities have launched a multi-billion dollar ambitious program meant to bring back the train service. Some services have already been restored. Sam Olukoya has the details.
This is Lagos Terminus, one of the largest train stations in Nigeria. Hundreds of passengers are trooping into the station as trains prepare to make their long journeys. For many years, Lagos Terminus, just like many stations in Nigeria, was inactive. But now it has become one of the most important stations in Nigeria. All newly launched train services are taking off from here. The most significant of this is the train service to Kano, the largest city in northern Nigeria. As the train made its 1,126-kilometer journey to Kano, passengers struggled to get on board at the various stations. Before the government's initiative to bring back the train service, most of those rushing to board the train would have traveled by road. A passenger, Joseph Olalekan, says many prefer to travel by trains because of the high accident rate on Nigerian roads.
Because our road is not okay. That's why you see people that they are used to enter train. This is how you see people that was entering like that.
For others like Benga Olaoye, the train is preferred because it is a cheaper alternative to road travel.
The cost is very cheap. It's not all that expensive. It's very fair, normal fair in place. It's avoidable.
The demand for train is higher than what the available service can offer. The consequence is that the coaches are always crowded. Jacob Martins is unhappy about the crowded coaches.
We just jam-pack inside the train, body odor, people picking pockets, all these things. If the thing was well organized, there couldn't be all these things.
Undanusa Undaksu is Assistant Director, Public Relations of the Nigerian Railway Corporation. He says when completed, the multi-billion dollar program meant to revamp the rail system will meet the high demand for rail travel. He says beyond this, the corporation plans to extend the train service to other West African countries.
Very soon, the country rail system will be linked to Chad and Niger Republic. That's one of the projects that has been embarked by the federal government. So also the neighboring country of Benin, Cotonou down to, you know, Ivory Coast and Ghana.
The plan to revamp Nigeria's rail system will cost billions of dollars. In the coming years, Nigeria will spend $6 billion to buy new coaches, while another $3 billion will be spent to build 300 kilometers of rail lines. Authorities say Nigeria has chosen to invest this much in the rail sector because, as Africa's most populous country, a functional rail system will enhance the country's economic and social growth.
Sam Olukoya reporting. Now the people of South Africa should have little to worry about when it comes to lighting up their Christmas trees. The main reason for this is that the use of solar energy has had a positive impact on those who cannot afford high electricity costs. The government there had planned to install 1 million solar heaters in both households and commercial buildings by the year 2014. Experts say the country's drive to embrace solar energy has helped residents to save money and has reduced air pollution caused by the continued use of coal in generating electricity. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo sent this report.
The commitment by the South African government to pursue clean, renewable energy is gradually showing positive results. To date, close to 200,000 households are using solar water heaters. The heaters, which are distributed free of charge, are part of a renewable energy plan which began in 2009. The heaters have brought relief to many families like that of Nozuko Mambu. The 53-year-old lady, who lives in one of the impoverished suburbs of Soweto, Johannesburg, was full of praise.
I find the solar geyser very useful because before, at times when there was no electricity, we'd be bathing with cold water. But now we're still able to bathe with hot water even if there's no electricity. And our electricity charges are now less than we were paying when we had to boil our bath water with an electric kettle.
Mambu's young daughter, Zukany Mbaha, says the solar geyser has made her school life a lot easier.
I would wake up and light the kettle, and then I wash myself, then I go to school. I feel better because now I don't wake up and light kettle. I just wake up and get hot water. I'm excited.
Riding on that excitement, some Sowetans who are beneficiaries of the solar heaters are now calling on the government to provide them with solar systems that have enough power for lighting as well as cooking. Yamugela Sehala is one of them.
It will be nice because when the electricity is gone, you can't have stress because you still have solars that will light us up.
With solar radiation at an average of 220 watts per square meter, South Africa is well equipped to use solar energy as a resource. There are plans to install 4 million solar water heaters by 2030. The Renewable Energy Initiative is already creating hundreds of jobs. And as we just heard, it has helped cut electricity costs. More importantly, studies show that the solar geysers have contributed to a significant reduction in carbon emissions. Anska Kina, Africa Director for the World Future Council, an international human rights organization calling for a just and peaceful future, says that clean energy saves both the environment and money in the long run.
With renewable energy production, you have high upfront costs because you pay for the technology once. But you have very, very low operation costs because you get the sun and the wind for free. And so there needs to be a mechanism in place to cushion the upfront costs. But then the running costs are almost zero apart from maintenance.
Although the cost may make it difficult for South Africa to achieve its ambitious targets for clean energy usage, there is no doubt that the initiative is a sign of a country on the move.
Tuzo Kumalo reporting. Let's hope solar energy will help South Africans light up their Christmas trees. For nationals of Rwanda, Uganda and Kenya, the year 2014 will bring free movement across their borders. Residents of these three countries will be able to cross the borders using their national identification cards as travel documents. And that's not all. The three nations, Rwanda, Uganda and Kenya, will also start issuing a single tourist visa, a move that is expected to boost tourism in the East African region. Flora Kaitesi reports from Kigali.
Akagera National Park is one of the major tourist sites in Rwanda. Destinations like this are expected to get more visitors following a decision by Rwanda, Uganda and Kenya to issue a single tourist visa from January 2014. At the same time, residents of these countries will be able to use their national identification cards as travel documents. The decision follows a meeting of the heads of state of the three countries in Kampala in June this year, at which they agreed on the need to speed up the implementation of these two initiatives. Joseph Olelenku is Kenya's cabinet secretary in charge of government affairs.
We are happy as if East Africans coming together. And the action we have seen Rwanda, Uganda and Kenya take is in furtherance of the intention to make sure that our people freely move within their countries.
Tourism development is one of the major economic ambitions of the three East African countries. The move to issue a single tourist visa is seen as placing them at a very significant position. Currently, the three countries have different visa regulations, with fees ranging from $5 to $50 for a single entry and $50 to $100 for a multiple entry visa. Abraham Zwandile is a tourist from South Africa.
I think this is a very good move because I think it's something beautiful, something good, because, for example, in Rwanda, I'm going Goliath tracking. I'll have a chance to go to Kenya, where I'm going for wild beast migration. So having to pay for one visa, I think, will be really, really attractive.
The residents of these countries also anticipate benefits from using IDs as travel documents. Jean Baraga is a Rwandan businesswoman who travels frequently to purchase merchandise for sale back home.
We are looking at this as an easy way of traveling from country to country without any problems or restrictions, especially for people doing business. But I also think that other people will also benefit. For example, people seeking medical services from across the border who can travel easily.
The process is in line with the goals laid out in the East African Community Market Protocol that was signed in 2010. Although it is seen as a positive tool for integration, questions are being raised over why Burundi and Tanzania, other key members of the East African community, seem to be excluded from the process. Uganda's Minister for East African Community Affairs, Shane Bageni, gave this explanation.
We have provisions within the treaty which all the partner states signed, and we have also made certain decisions that allow bilateral arrangements or trilateral arrangements that will move faster the decisions that we have taken. We will inform the other partner states which are not represented here.
The resolution concerning the use of a single entry visa and use of identity cards will now be tabled before the presidential conference scheduled to take place in Nairobi this month, where heads of state of Rwanda, Uganda and Kenya will ratify the decision.
Flora Kaitesi reporting. More stories to come in a moment, so don't go away. Earlier this year, Liberia's capital, Monrovia, for the first time witnessed the installation of traffic lights since the country's 14-year civil war ended in 2003. And most motorists say it is a step in the right direction. The Liberian conflict badly destroyed the country's infrastructure and fragmented its population. But 10 years later, life is returning to normal. So the arrival of traffic lights could be taken as a sign of new times. Our correspondent, Julius Kanuba, was on Broad Street in Monrovia and filed this report.
Well, I am standing on Broad Street where traffic looks relatively tense. This is one of Liberia's busiest streets, and we have the installation of traffic lights. Vehicles have actually come to a momentary standstill, where they are stopping in line with the traffic lights regulation. So this has been a new development in Liberia.
Many Liberians hail this initiative as a step in the right direction, as I found out from both commercial drivers and pedestrians.
My name is Anthony. The traffic light is very good and it helps with the drivers to avoid traffic or to avoid traffic congestion.
While many appreciated the installation of the traffic lights, one commercial driver told me the lights equally have some negative effects.
The traffic light for me, when it comes to order, it has brought some order on the traffic, but when it comes to the traffic congestion, the traffic light has caused a lot of traffic congestion around the city.
The installation of the traffic lights commenced in January this year thanks to a generous donation by the Chinese government to Liberia. Prior to the connection, police officers were often found deployed in the streets, directing traffic, as explained by this officer, Emmanuel Colley.
Yeah, we're directing traffic from the signal we learn at the police academy, where you direct the traffic, you put your finger up, and then another car comes, you stop the other one with the other hands, and then after that, you can regulate the other traffic.
The new traffic lights are powered by solar panels, meaning that they do not need to be connected up to an external source of power. And given the irregular supply of electricity in Monrovia, it is probably a wise move for Liberia. Our Deputy Press and Public Affairs Officer of the Ministry of Transport of Liberia, Limu Kliming, described the installation of traffic lights in the country as good news for the transport sector.
You know that since Liberia came from war, the issue of traffic lights has been one of the most important things. The installation this time around, I think it's a major boost in the transport sector of Liberia.
Julius Kanuba reporting there. It is often difficult for pregnant women in Africa to get reliable information about how best to look after themselves and their babies. However, in Ghana, they can use Mobile Midwife, a service through which expectant mothers can receive medical advice via their mobile phones. The mothers are told of the advantages of breastfeeding, good nutrition, immunization, and of having the baby delivered in a hospital. Local myths about pregnancy which might cause them harm are debunked. And as you're going to hear in the next report by Isaac Kalechi in Accra, the service is helping to bring about a marked change in attitudes to health care.
For English, press 1 on your phone keypad. For some, but
that's the message on the mobile phone of 28-year-old Gift Nyanse, a nursing mother in the Ahintia community in Ghana's central region. The message enables Gifty and other women in the community to know when to take their babies to the hospital for a medical checkup. Pregnant women also receive alerts to go for regular examinations. This is thanks to the Mobile Technology for Community Health in Ghana, a technology-driven health initiative focusing on maternal health and antenatal care. The technology was developed by health officials in Ghana with support from Columbia University in the United States. The technology is an application-based system. There are two separate applications, the mobile midwife application, which targets pregnant women, and the nurse application, which can be likened to a simplified form for collecting clinical information. Dominic Kobina is an official at the technical department of the Ghana Health Service. He explains why the technology was developed.
The kind of treatment that you need to prevent you from either dying during birth, help you to make sure that your baby grew nicely and other things, you don't get those information. You are in faraway village, very far, and then you have to walk all the way and come for vaccination or come for treatment and come and the nursing officer is not there. So we needed to get the message to them.
Mabel Sagbefia is a monitoring and evaluation officer on the program. She says every opportunity is being explored to ensure that the women get access to mobile phones.
So the challenge typically is if the woman has no access herself to the mobile phone, because I think when you have ownership, then you have more power.
The Ahintia village in central Ghana is one of the communities where this technology is being piloted. Some nursing mothers and pregnant women have formed a club which helps them to share more ideas and information. Naomi got registered when she was pregnant.
It has really helped me a lot since I was new to this. It reminds me times I have to go for, antenatal and all those things. And it has to tell me some of the duration of the pregnancy and the time I'll be giving birth.
The district director of health at Ewutu Breku, Patricia Entry, told me that district-level assessment has shown vast improvement in the attitude of pregnant and nursing mothers towards seeking health care.
We have seen an increase in antenatal care coverage in the districts. We've seen an increase in immunization coverage. Mothers or the beneficiaries who listen to the message, they are very, very knowledgeable about health issues.
Isaac Kalechi fired that report from Accra.
It is often said that the African continent's vast minerals and resources benefit only a few, while plunging many regions into conflict. To resolve this problem, African mining experts gathered in Yaounde in Cameroon back in July to chart out a mining and natural resources extraction code which will place primary emphasis on transparency and accountability. Moki Kinseka has more.
Though Africa has not fully been able to exploit all of its natural resources, much of what has been extracted seems to have had little effect on ordinary citizens. Many people, especially those who live on land with mineral reserves, complain that they do not benefit from it. At times, this has resulted in armed conflicts and tensions between the people, mining companies, and governments. These concerns led to a meeting of mining experts who gathered in Yaounde to come up with a mining code that will help address this issue. The code lays emphasis on governance and transparency in mining contracts. It also encourages revenue sharing and environmental and social responsibility of all the partners involved. Professor Fabian Kott, a member of the African Union's steering committee, says the code will act as a guideline.
When those people are going to negotiate for international mining contract, they are having as a tool just their good faith. Whereas they are negotiating with people who have been doing that for a very, very long time and who are having the greatest expertise.
A recent World Bank publication estimates that over the past 20 years, more than 30 states in Africa either replaced or considerably altered their mining laws in response to increased competition for foreign direct investment as well as pressure from major donors. Professor Giles Rhodes from the University of Western Australia, who is assisting the African Union in coming up with a mining code, says the reforms should be directed towards attracting greater foreign investment without forgetting to consider the needs of the local populations.
One of the important things is to do the preparation for each particular country is to work out what are the important things, what are the important interests for all the stakeholders in the process, and to be thinking about that first before moving into the negotiations.
The mining code, which will be submitted to the African Union, is expected to be used as an African handbook for mining companies and governments.
And that report from Moki Kinseka brings us to the end of this Africa Link special Christmas edition. As usual, you can send your comments and suggestions to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. We are looking forward to bringing you more positive stories in the new year, showing how Africa is on the move in many different ways. On behalf of the entire African team, I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn, wishing you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem, how still we see the light above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars by.
Yet in the dark street shine.
And fears of all the years are